Hello and welcome to the KO Knockout Podcast. Today, we sit down with Sarah Fort, partner at Latham & Watkins, as she takes us through her journey. From the early years until the present, Sarah has dedicated her heart and soul not only to her career as a lawyer, but has also directed that passion into her community, making a difference and inspiring others. Please enjoy.
We are here because as women in business, we don't want to walk alone on our path to success. We believe that by teaching and supporting one another, we can gain the knowledge we need and build a community where we belong. We are the Knockouts, women who champion other women and see every obstacle as an opportunity. We have a repeat guest on today's episode of The Knockout, Sarah Fort. And the last time, Sarah, you were on here, we talked ESG, we talked business, and we invited you back because today we want to talk about you.
Great.
I would love to spend some time today learning about you and your background. What do you do now? But Sarah, where did you start out? Where are you from? What was your early days like? What were you like as a child? So let's start there.
Oh, wow. We're going back. We're going back into ancient history. I love it. So I'm originally from Connecticut, although I now live and work in Texas. And most of my early years were kind of part of a pretty small community in the suburbs. And I will claim it, I was not that person that had like big dreams for myself necessarily. You know, I always liked school. I always liked to study. I always liked to read. But I really was looking forward to kind of a quiet life. I wasn't planning on being a lawyer or anything like that. I don't have a lot of lawyers in my family. In fact, a lot of folks that, you know, if you know me well, you know, the family business is really the ministry. I've got more pastors and ministers in my family than any other profession. So lawyering kind of was a hard right in my early 20s that I think probably surprised some members of my family.
Do you know, you are not the first person lawyer that I've interviewed that had ministry in their family, in their background. I wonder if there's something about that there's a tie there in terms of the skill set or interest. That's very interesting. What do you think? I mean, what has that, did that inspire you in any way in your legal career?
You know, I think both are vocations, right? They both require something more of us as human beings than a 9-to-5. And I'm not talking just about the time commitment that is involved with effective lawyering. I think you know, you really are a counselor to your clients if you're doing it in the right way, I think. So that really requires a level of kind of soul involvement. You know, you need to be passionate about it at that level, I think, if you're going to do it well. So I think that from my perspective, that would be the similarity between the two.
That's fascinating. It's not for someone who lacks passion for sure. So that's an interesting connection. You know who it is? It's Davika. Well, I don't know if you know Davika, one of your colleagues.
I know Davika well. Yeah. I know Davika well.
Okay. So tell us, you love to read. You had sort of you called it a quiet dream, a quiet childhood. And now you're, I mean, essentially a pretty high powered attorney in Austin, Texas, which is a major metropolitan city. You know, how did you get sort of from point A to point M?
It was, you know, I'll give you the short version. It was definitely, it's been a wild ride. So, you know, I decided to go to law school because I had a really fantastic mentor who was a lawyer. And between undergrad and law school, I worked for him as a paralegal. And his name is Bill Crow. He's an attorney in Connecticut. And you know, I saw the passion that he brought to how he represented clients and how he cared. And it made me want to do the same thing. It made me want to work with people in that way. I'd always been a nerd. And so I had no idea what to really expect in applying to law school. I'll spoil the surprise ending. I got into every law school I applied to, and I ended up going to Yale. After Yale, I practiced in New York. I practiced in DC. And I never really necessarily expected to stay in big law when I first started practicing. I thought at the beginning, I'll do, 2 to 5 years and then I'll go in-house. But the truth is, it's just gotten so much fun that I can't leave it. I don't want to do anything other than what I get to do every day. And I think that's a real privilege to get to say that. I love working with clients. I love being able to work across the entire platform of the firm. And from my perspective, doing what I do, which is predominantly corporate governance and ESG work, is really about helping companies and other clients solve some of the hardest, most systemic issues of our day. So it's absolutely what I want to devote my life to.
You sort of gave me a natural opening here, but what are you passionate about in this role? What makes it so fun?
Yeah. So, Lindsay, that I could talk about ESG all day. and I've definitely geeked out with you guys before on the substance of what I do. I think the relationships that I get to form with clients is really a big driver for me, the ability to bring that kind of value. But beyond that, I think personally for me, I'm passionate about staying in big law. As a queer woman of color, there are not a ton of us. we are there. We are here. But I really, when I started out, I know we've talked about this. When I started out practicing at the firm that I was at the time, which is not, was not the firm that I'm at now, I faced a lot of really daily discrimination and harassment around my identity. And there was really no one that I could go to. I didn't feel that there was anyone I could go to and say, this is what I'm experiencing. And how do I protect myself? And so I want to be that person, right? I want to be that sanctuary for younger attorneys starting out who might face, levels of harassment, might face discrimination, might just face those daily microaggressions that wear at your soul over time. And so, I want to be that person that they can come to. It's a big part of the reason why I started the Women of Color Network at Vinson & Elkins. When I joined V&E, I really saw an opportunity for there to be a group across identities, but with the common intersection of being women and being people of color, because a lot of times there aren't a large number of us in any particular office. And that has really been one of the most satisfying things I've done, in the past 5 years.
Do you feel like you're succeeding in providing a better experience for the next generation, or is it a struggle? I mean, where are you? What's changed between when you were in that situation and where we are today?
Wow. I mean, that's a huge question, right? I think, and no one person, I think, can solve what is ultimately an industry-wide issue. But I think I try to do my part with the individuals that I come across, whether they're people within my firm or their clients, or their counsel at another firm. For my perspective, this is something that has to be prioritized regardless of how or where you practice. So, I think what I can say for me now, as opposed to Sarah Fort, first year associate, is I feel empowered. I feel empowered by my career and the effort that I have put into it. I feel empowered by my clients and their appreciation when I deliver value. And I feel empowered by the next generation of, diverse attorneys, Black, Indigenous, and people of color coming into a space that, let's be really honest, when it was formed, at the beginning, it was not only not made for them, it was really made intentionally to exclude them. And now I see them coming in to the space in a way that is really marvelous. And it is inspiring to me to see how they walk into big law.
Without going into your day job and talking about ESG, I want to bring up, you have a very interesting approach in terms of, yes, there are principles and there are standards and there are important things that we need to do to improve transparency, and sort of this early stage of implementing ESG is really discovery, getting good data, getting everyone on the same page. But while we're doing that, there are potential consequences to some of those initiatives that maybe people don't think about, or, you know, they're just so busy gathering data that they're forgetting that there's sometimes a human on the other side of some of these changes. And I think you have this really broad perspective when it comes to ESG, and you're able to help clients see kind of all sides of an issue. What do you bring to the ESG movement that's really special and unique? And do you have an example of how you're sort of stepping in and making sure we're seeing the big picture here?
Yeah, no. So, I mean, I think there are more questions right now than answers. That's the reality. I think one of the things that I'm really paying attention to right now is, with all of the traction on a global scale that's being made, and there are debates around this, but all of the progress that has been committed to, I guess, is the better way of putting it, with respect to climate change and meeting the demands around what our world looks like going forward, in that regard, I do get concerned that we are not necessarily understanding how the bias that we already have in our minds is affecting the social elements of climate change, how we see climate change risk and opportunity, and particular on the opportunity side. You know, I do get concerned sometimes that the strategies that we put in place, the data that we glean, doesn't take into consideration, some of the social elements that we would hope to take into consideration when we want to take a broader view of risk and opportunity, which is really what ESG enables us to do, right? It enables us to use multiple lenses, ideally. That's what it should do. But I do think sometimes some of the potential risks to communities that are historically disadvantaged in our desire, in our positive, you know, it's a good thing, desire to address the challenges of climate change gets overlooked at times. That's a concern of mine, and it's something that I've been doing a fair amount of digging on, because I don't think there's enough, particularly in the US, but really also on the global scale, I don't think there's enough study into that particular issue.
Well, I have one of our other episodes in the podcast is going to be with a woman who leads A Safe Place for Youth, which is a homeless shelter for youth in Los Angeles. And talking to her just about the number of kids that are showing up without a safe place to sleep at night, without any kind of support system. I mean, you think, okay, we're talking about homelessness, but she brings up affordable housing. It's interesting, as one of the major issues, which really ties back to kind of what KO does, which is we're talking to real estate investors, we're talking to folks that are from an ESG standpoint, trying to make buildings more energy efficient, but some, you know, better materials, sometimes that does add costs, you know, so there's this sort of complex matrix of issues that I see, because just in my seat. And I'm curious, you know, do you have an example that you could share where people are trying to do the right thing, but there's just some unintended consequences of that?
Well, I think anytime we're talking about shifting capital, we really should also be having a social conversation. And I don't know that we always are. I know that we aren't always having that conversation when we talk about, you know, moving capital in a more green direction. We're not talking about communities on the coast of, you know, Texas and Louisiana, and what climate change looks like for those communities when you see companies shift from one particular type of energy strategy to another, or when you see them look to offset, you know, their carbon footprint through carbon capture and that sort of thing. So I think there are broad questions that we're not, I think, effectively asking And that's really what ESG should be about. It should be about asking, you know, those broad questions in addition to, you know, getting into the weeds and the details. I think we also need to ask, you know, what does this look like on a global scale? What does this look like on the scale of a particular region? And what does this look like for a particular community?
Well, transitioning back to who is Sarah Fort a little bit, you know, when we spoke on the last podcast, you sort of offhand mentioned that your morning routine is a deal breaker for you. Like fitness is really important. And I agree with you. I'm sort of the same way, but you have a routine and you have a very sort of specific philosophy on this. Tell us about the importance of taking care of yourself and how you approach that.
So, Lindsay, I know that you've heard my saying before, and this is something that I frequently tell junior women of color, that I believe that self-care is warfare. And it is a defense and an offense against, you know, much of what we face in our professional lives. So I am a little bit of a gym rat. I am blessed enough to have, you know, gym equipment at my home. So I don't have to have that time to and fro a gym. But I think from my perspective, that was kind of a deal I made with myself when I first started practicing, was that the moment that the profession required that I really cease to take care of myself, quite frankly, on a long-term basis, that I would leave, I would make a change. And thankfully, I've always found a way to take care of myself. And that has been really, I think, I honestly don't know that I would still be in big law if I had not been, if I had not made that commitment to myself. And that doesn't mean that there aren't days, right, that get very, very long. And that there aren't times when, you know, I have to kind of prioritize something else. But I would say in the aggregate, I've been lucky enough to be able to figure out how to work that out.
What do you do when you feel like you are slipping away from self-care? Like how do you fire up the warriors? How do you know, what signals do you get when you're not putting enough time and energy into yourself? And then what do you do about it?
I mean, I think we all kind of probably recognize some of the signs of when we're approaching a place where we need to rest, right? And one of my father's sayings is, time off fuels time on. So instead of seeing time off as, you know, taking away from who you are as a professional, it really adds to it, right? It really enables you to refuel. I'm not perfect at it. I'm going to be honest. And I think there are probably folks in my life who feel that my balance is different than what their balance would be. Right. And that's fine. That's fine. But I think, you know, it's important to step sometimes outside of our own selves and see ourselves as we would see somebody else that we care about and love. And, you know, is that person exhibiting symptoms of burnout, of being overwhelmed, of needing rest, and to kind of treat ourselves with the same level of grace. I'm not perfect at it. I'm not perfect at it, but it's something that I am working on, definitely.
For those of you who are listening, Sarah is sitting here talking to me, and her background is this wall of books. And so I have to ask, Sarah, what are you nerding out about right now?
Oh my gosh, there's a lot. So some of what I'm nerding out about right now are things that are happening in other jurisdictions around ESG. There's been some really interesting movement. I'd also say that I think like a lot of people in the ESG space, I'm just waiting with bated breath for the SEC to come out with proposed climate change rules and other ESG related regulation. I think I'm probably going to be waiting for, you know, we're having this conversation in mid December. I'm thinking I'm probably going to be waiting for about another 2 months. We'll see. But I'm definitely waiting for that and thinking about what that looks like. And really getting back to what we discussed earlier, you know, the social elements of climate change are something that I'm really focused on. And I'm I'm a little concerned about whether or not the SEC is going to take that into consideration with any proposed regulation that they come out with. I think it's really something that, you know, in some ways, I think the social elements can be harder than the environmental elements at times of ESG, although really, you know, there's no need to compete. They're all really difficult. But I think that's a big part of what I'm nerding out about right now, definitely.
You already shared your mantra that guides you. This is always my last question. Self-care is warfare. So I don't want to put you on the spot with another mantra, but let me end with this. What are you personally really looking forward to in 2022 or professionally? Aside from ESG, you're not allowed to nerd out again. What else?
Yeah, sure. So, I mean, I think self-care is warfare is definitely one of my sayings, but I would say if I have a personal mantra, it's really community first. And that really is because of where I come from and all the experiences that I've had as a lawyer and a professional. And in terms of what I'm excited about, I am really excited in 2022 about, you know, new relationships and new community and growing community. You know, almost a week doesn't go by that I don't find somebody else brilliant and absolutely asking questions that I haven't necessarily thought of in the ESG space. And so I'm always growing my international community of fellow ESG geeks. But I think even, you know, in my own life, in my own, personal and professional life, really looking forward to digging deep with those relationships and supporting other people. You know, it's not my saying, it's a saying that, you know, was invented way before me, but that teamwork makes the dream work. And I do really believe that is an essential element of how I've succeeded professionally and personally. So I'm looking forward to investing in my team.
I love that. Here at KO, we definitely believe that there's so much great joy and fulfillment that comes from being a part of a community, contributing to it, you know, leaning on it when you need to. And so I think all the work that you do both internally at B&E and then within the ESG community is so powerful, very inspiring to me. So thank you, Sarah, so much. It's been a pleasure to sort of get a little bit more behind the scenes and learn a little bit more about you.
Great. Thank you so much, Lindsay.
Self-care is warfare and community first. Sarah lives both of these mantras and reminds us that while we continue to champion others, we cannot forget to care for ourselves in the process. She brings value to every interaction, aids in providing a better future for the next generation, and fights for diversity at every chance. Thank you for joining us for season 3 of the KO Knockout Podcast. We will be returning with brand new inspiring stories.